We had to cut $100 million from the business, and we had 30 days to tell corporate how we were going to do it. That's a lot of money. It was a huge amount of money.
That's Louise Francesconi, a former Fortune 500 division president who was responsible for cutting the funds required to ensure the organization could continue to be a viable business.
We were forced to consolidate because the business was in such bad shape. So we had a huge amount of change that had to occur, huge amount of integration, and we had huge results that all had to occur at the same time. And we didn't have a lot of time.
Arbinger's work with organizations often starts right here. When the stakes are so high, a company recognizes they cannot afford to fail. This was also the case of another organization, a multinational headquartered in Europe.
The CEO of a very large manufacturing company called up Arbinger, said, "Hey, we need help. We've got to cut $100 million out of our budget. Can you help facilitate that process?"
That's one of Arbinger's most experienced consultants, Mike Merchant, who is one of the people who gets called in when companies call needing help with high-pressure challenges. And don't be confused. This is not Louise's company. This is another company that called with the exact same mandate. Cut $100 million from the business in a way that doesn't hurt the business. I'm just curious what it's like for you to go in, and how do you stay in a grounded place knowing that you're the person that's brought in to help facilitate the success of this?
It's a little unnerving sometimes, especially when they're quite worried about whether this is going to work or not. They were a nervous wreck. It yeah. was, where is this going? Are we going to get there? But they know their business way better than I do. They don't have to be an expert in their business. I just have to trust in the material and trust in the people. I can help people get to a place where they can actually unlock solutions, possibilities, creativity, innovation. And I know that only happens when they're helping each other collaboratively, thinking about something outside of just themselves. That we'll get there. We'll get there. I don't always know what it looks like. And that's the part that might be a little unnerving sometimes. But I know we're going to get there.
I know we're going to get there. That is a lot of confidence when your job is to help facilitate something as high pressure as cutting $100 million. But it doesn't have to be $100 million. The real question is, how do we navigate any high stakes challenge when jobs are on the line and the margin for error is razor thin? That's what we're exploring today. We'll see how two clients on different continents with distinct circumstances took on the Herculean task of cutting $100 million by working with an outward mindset. Welcome to Leading Outward, the Arbinger Institute's podcast, where we explore the tools and ideas we've used for over 45 years to help people solve their toughest leadership and organizational challenges by leading with an outward mindset, seeing people as people. I'm McKinley Otterson.
When we got there the first morning, I was finally able to talk to the CEO at 7:45. And I said, "What problem are you facing? And we'll solve it in 2 days."
This is Dwayne Boyce, the senior consultant from Arbinger that Louise brought in to help her and her 25 vice presidents tackle this challenge. For Louise and her team, Dwayne played the same role Mike did in the other client organization.
The CEO said to me, "Well, here's the problem. It's confidential, but we're being bought by another company. And as part of the purchase agreement, we have to reduce our cost base." And she said, "I think we can get 20 million of that by layoffs. That's my biggest problem, if we can solve that, come up with $20 million in savings in layoffs in the next 2 days. And that savings has to hit the bottom line before the purchase agreement can be signed."
So I set up the meeting in what I thought was a good way to do it and asked each person to focus on what they were going to do to contribute to the success of cutting $100 million. And I framed it, I thought, right. Everybody worked on it. They all briefed what they were going to do. And it was painful. I mean, you realize you weren't going to make this happen.
Okay, we're going to pause right here with Louise and her team and jump over to see how Mike is starting out his session with the client in Europe.
The two main objectives are to make sure there's alignment from everybody that we actually need to cut $100 million in order to achieve our targeted results. And then two, the objective was to cut the $100 million. And so we started off the session just like, how are we going to tackle this? How would we tackle with an inward mindset? How would we tackle with an outward mindset? Start in the right way.
Start in the right way is a simple but powerful exercise that we often use at the start of a meeting, a project, or anything that we just want to succeed. As a group, you think through the ways the meeting, project, or experience would go if everyone was self-focused. And then you take the exact same situation and you say, okay, now if we were to approach this project, meeting, whatever, with an others-focused mindset, what would that look like? And when I asked Mike to walk me through how the exercise went with this team, he actually pulled up the list of things they had written down on the board during the session.
If we were to try and cut $100 million out of your budget with an inward mindset, how would we approach it? Well, it'd be someone else's problem. The problems are outside of our influence, not open to others' perspectives. We cannot change. There'll be a lot of blame. I'm better than others. Defensiveness. Not thinking about how this impacts others. Not accepting reality. Pass it on to our customers. When we got to pass it on to our customers, that just opened up this huge conversation around why don't we just increase our prices, pass the change off to our customers. We had about half the room that said that's what we ought to do. And then the other half of the room is like, no, we've already passed on so much to our customers, and it's going to impact our competitiveness because we've not warned them. They're trying to make projections of their own. And this is going to impact them in a negative way. We can't do that. Right. We have it within our team to be able to cut back. It started to become clear to me this was something bigger.
After the team walks through the ways they would show up if they had an inward mindset, Mike then asked the team, if we were to show up in the next 2 days with an outward mindset, what would that look like?
The team identified we'd focus on solutions rather than problems. We work together as a team. There'd be openness. How can I help? There'd be ownership, connectedness to the solutions, not imposing others, but developing with others, staying calm, give and take, safe to speak up, and then really listening to each other, seek to understand the challenge, and respectful of the perspective of others. So we had this really great setting the tone, making a commitment that would be outward.
This is precisely what was missing from Louise's setup with her team. In a classic way to engage a team, she asked what they were going to do to contribute to cutting $100 million. But she didn't account for the fact that most people will go inward when faced with that kind of pressure. Who wouldn't? When people think about using less money in any context, whether in an organization or in our personal lives, the first thought is usually, okay, what's got to go? And while that's a totally natural response, it can invite us to go into this protective inward mode where you're thinking, okay, I need to make sure that what is being threatened is not mine. And when we're stuck in that inward way of being, it's difficult to see what possibilities are available to us, what opportunities exist. That's why for the group Mike was working with, it made all the difference to tackle the core question, should we pass the cost on to our customers, with an outward mindset. So now we're headed back to Louise and her team, who are stuck and know they need to do something differently.
So we got to a point halfway through the day, and Dwayne was with us, who said, Louise, would you mind if I stepped in and help maybe shape this meeting a little differently? I said, please, help yourself. You know, at this point, we were all so depressed. He said, I'd like you each to pair up. I don't care who you pair up with. You know, I always get hung up on, well, you know, these people should go with these people. He said, no. He's just pick a person. Just turn around, pair up with the person next to you. He said, we're going to spend 2 hours. Now, out of an 8-hour day, that's a lot of time. So, you know, I'm starting to break a sweat at this point. He said, we're going to spend 2 hours, and I want you, as an example, Louise, to spend an hour saying all the things that you really need help with to really cut money. What are the things that you're working on? And the other person did the same thing. We did that for an hour. And then for the second hour, he said, now I want each of you to ask the other person and think about what you could do out of the resources you have that would help the other person save money. Not cut their money, save their money.
We began thinking about this problem with all these executives. In terms of other people in the room, not you, but in terms of other people, how could you help other people in the room solve their part of this problem?
Remember that this is Dwayne, the consultant supporting Louise and her team.
What can you do? What can you offer? Just after a couple of hours of starting to work in an arbitrary way, this vice president raises his hand, and he was the most dominant of them all. And he raised his hand and he said, I think we should change our goal. I think the goal should be that we save $20 million without laying off anyone. And everybody in the room just became jubilant. Well, of course, that's right. That's right. Now you got to remember, the original problem was, how do we go about laying off people and where that will show a $20 million savings? How do we do that? And then it became even more powerful as they worked with each other to think about how they could help each other to come up with cutting $20 million off the bottom line.
To go from planning to get a fifth of your total purely from layoffs to we're going to get to our total of $100 million without any layoffs is such a dramatic shift. But because they were no longer in self-preservation, self-focus mode, they were able to see so many options of where to save money that they didn't even need to consider layoffs anymore. Now, even though Mike started his work with a client by creating the foundation of how they were going to work together, they were still a highly divided group with a pretty narrow view of what possibilities existed.
The financial officer and one of the manufacturing leads presented out the problem, and we'd prepared for this in advance, and the projected numbers over the course of the next couple of years and how we were way below the projected number and we weren't going to reach our targets unless we cut that out. And then here's what we believe are some of the contributing factors to the current state that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. That just opened up all kinds of discussion because people had different perspectives on the contributing factors. So it was a pretty divided group.
Well, that's something that I want you to talk more about, Mike, is the resistance. How did you go from this divided group to a really highly collaborative, fully bought in group?
Well, I'm always going to ask, all right, who might be resistant in some way to us trying to do this? Because I would love to have a call with them in advance. The more they feel heard by the facilitator when we're stepping into the room, the less I have to spend time making sure I do hear them while we're there.
Yeah.
And so anybody I think might be resistant, I want to have a phone call with them. And so I did talk to their sales lead, and she downloaded with me. She shared with me her perspective on where things were at. And so I walked in that room, and her and I already had a connection. But also, I believe having someone from Arbinger there, they know what we represent. Mm. Everyone behaves better, I think, when someone's in the room.
Yeah, it's like
they know
a physical representation of accountability.
That's
yeah,
because someone's there, and we've made this commitment to each other. When you think about cutting money, I'm thinking, how's this going to impact me and my team? And this is going to impact me in a negative way.
Yeah.
So you're already resisting that idea of having to cut something out of our budget mm-hmm. to achieve our goal. Because as you start off a session like that, people are like, okay, when are we going to get there? And look, I have a million other things I could be doing right now. And if this is not going to work, I'd rather be focused on working on that right now. The sooner I can get them thinking strategically, the sooner I can get them playing chess with their business, the better.
Probably the most compelling piece of both of these experiences is that neither Mike nor Dwayne supplied the business strategies. All the ideas were already in the teams. But when people were heads down thinking about themselves, they couldn't see them. It was like trying to play chess while totally blind to all the open spaces your pieces could move. What unlocked strategic thinking wasn't strategy or ideas, it was outwardness. The way they showed up with the situation and with each other made it possible to tap into the brilliance that had been there all along.
So we said, all right, let's take these contributing factors and we're going to put folks in small teams And we're going to have them actually identify what are the things we could do to mitigate that contributing factor or make a change. Because it was really clear in that entire discussion that if we just cut $100 million, they were going to be back in the same place that they were in several months from now. They're going to have to cut again if they didn't make some business changes.
And were they clear at this point on that yet? Or is that something that you were seeing that people were getting to an awareness of?
Everyone was getting to an awareness of that. I certainly got an awareness to it right away when we were trying to come to an alignment around, do we really need to cut $100 million? Because there was such a divided group around pass on to the customer or let's make the cut, that actually addressing what are the business practices right now that are contributing to their loss would take people off the focus of just passing on to the customer and help people feel more empowered around, hey, I actually think we can make an adjustment. So we had people in small groups and I had them do two things. One was, what are the short-term things we could do to mitigate this contributing factor, and what would be the long-term business change we needed to make to that? Mm-hmm. And we reported out.
When people were reporting out, did you feel like there was more alignment, at least within those small teams, of, okay, this is actually a contributor?
Much more alignment. The sooner I get people in small groups where everyone has a voice and they get to put their best thinking on the paper, right? And then we have a larger group discussion focused on that one contributing factor. And what are the possibilities? What are the strategic opportunities to make adjustments? And then everyone gets feedback. And when they're giving feedback, we're adding notes on that chart.
Right.
And then when we're all done, we have this list of ideas.
While the experiences of both of these client organizations are remarkable, they are distinctly different. Louise and her team just needed to cut the $100 million. And as if that isn't enough, the organization Mike supported had to do that as well, but they also had to identify ways they could adjust the business as a whole to ensure that the act of cutting $100 million was sustainable. And you'll hear this reflected in the list of ideas Mike shares, where the factors identified addressed not only the immediate need to cut $100 million, but also the long-term adjustments to the business as a whole.
They had been making some effort to cut back on their footprint, to get some efficiencies in the manufacturing plants. And that was going way slower than was anticipated because of how long it took for certain decisions to be made. And could we localize some of those decisions? There was some challenges with outsourcing to different plants rather than optimizing the use of their own assets. So that cost of outsourcing was really expensive to them. The R&D footprint was way too big and they were putting a lot of energy and effort into things that weren't going to make money for them. We had some major challenges between sales and the suppliers based on pricing. So they had to resolve that together as a group. Optimized structures was one of the ones they came up with. For example, they felt like meetings were unproductive. So that was actually one element of saving money, was making meetings more productive. It actually added up all the hours people spent in meetings versus actually doing the work. Those were some of the business practices that were revealed when we started thinking about contributing factors to their current state, why they were in a position where they needed to cut $100 million. Which they would have never had visibility to if we would have just passed this on to the customer. None of those would have been addressed.
Right.
And they would, again, be back in the same position they were in. So this process actually helped them clean up a lot of those practices to ensure that they could reach their targets long term. We ended up with 8 clear strategies, short-term solutions to get to the $100 million. And then 4 business strategies that would actually change how they did business to ensure that they were going to stay competitive over the long term.
So the entire process up until this point has been helping the team get awareness of the business practices that are not sustainable and how to adjust those. And now that Mike is at this point of clarity with the team, my question is, where did he take them next?
And I invite each one of the teams to report out the plan that they had identified regarding their short-term strategy. And the actual dollar amount that they'd identified and what were their justifications for that dollar number. Mm-hmm. And anytime I have someone put a draft of a work plan together, we always ask them, okay, look, here's our best thinking around the work plan. Here's how much we think we can contribute to the $100 million. And here's our 3 biggest challenges to getting there, right?
Why do you have them do that, Mike?
Because the challenges are actually what invite collaborative helping. there's something about asking people, what are the potential pitfalls or challenges to actually doing the work you put up there? All of a sudden I see, oh, this is hard. This isn't easy. If they're going to execute on this, it's going to require these resources. They're not going to be able to focus on this. It just brings that human element into it, which makes it much easier to invite people to help and support that effort. So we put them in small groups and then come back, and how can we help mitigate those? Fantastic discussion feedback that will help refine that plan. And our financial officer continually got a running number. Are we meeting that 100 million? Are we getting that 100 million? And so we went through all the work plans that were short. About 34 million short.
Okay, you have half a day left with this group,
yeah,
and you're short. How did you continue to work in such a way that got you to where you needed to be?
I was a little nervous. I was going to jump in and see if we could pick it up in some place between divisions and departments. And someone brought up the loss makers. In other words, they have products, things that they deliver that don't make them money, but hopefully will build good rapport with customers. Someone brought that up as a possible solution. When it comes to loss makers, a lot of people have a lot of buy-in on why we're doing that business. But by that point, this team had been together over this period of time, helping teams overcome the challenges that they foresee. And so everyone's just in the spirit of helpfulness, right? Mm. And we were able to take the loss makers and really identify work that we could do there. So we ended up closing the gap by having a really great discussion around that and what changes we could make there. And even though maybe their one passion project got cut back, they were part of the decision for that to happen. By the time we were done, we had short-term strategies to get to $100 million. And we had a lot of data and input on what are some of the long-range changes we need to make to our business to ensure that we don't end up back here at $100 million.
Yeah.
And they didn't pass the $100 million on to the customer.
This is pretty remarkable. Half of this group of executives thought the only solution to this massive problem was to pass the cost on to the customer. The other half didn't like that idea, but they didn't have any other ideas in mind. But after highly collaborative, others-focused outward work, they were able to come up with enough ideas to cut the entirety of the $100 million without passing costs onto the customer. Now we're going to head back to Louise and her team to see the outcome of the work that they did.
It was like magic. It was magic because at the end of the day, we cut over $100 million, and not one person felt that they had sacrificed. Because instead, I was thinking about the things that I could do to help you cut. You were thinking of the things you could do to help me cut. What could you do different that could help me? It radically reshaped the business. Anytime people hear the expression, focus on what I can do to make you successful, it just sounds like blah, 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 blah. And it would be if it wasn't so focused on results, but in context of a problem, a business problem, an issue, an innovative thought, broadening to grow, it radically reshaped the business. A, check, we got the business results right away. But it radically changed the way we started to interface as a team. It really taught us the power of listening to the other person and understanding what you can truly do to make the other person successful, which we had intellectually been working on, but we hadn't really understood the power of. And it was huge. Most of us are very trained and rewarded intellectually for being smart ourselves, solving problems ourselves, being able to see solutions ourselves. And so it's extremely hard
to focus on a result that is not about you. That is not something we're trained for. And so it's hard work.
It is hard work to show up with the people around us in a way that makes space for someone else's success in the midst of our own pressure. But going it alone is also hard. So the choice isn't about which path is easier. They're both incredibly demanding. The real question is, which path actually works? Which brings us back to where the story began. A CEO who is nervous and understandably skeptical.
As we wrapped up the second session, certainly a lot of work still to do, but everyone owning what they needed to put in motion. I always love to go around the room and have everyone have an opportunity to share what takeaways, any reservations, any last minute questions, thoughts, comments, and then we'll have the leader go last. The CFO, who was probably the most nervous of all, sharing with the group that he will never underestimate the power of what it means to come together as a team to solve a particular problem issue. And that's how he'll lead going forward, and he is now the new leader there. So just that power of collaboration, working together to solve a problem as a team. And then the CEO at the very end, his final words were, "I will never make a one-sided decision again."
So cool.
He was so pleased with the result. He was so pleased with the engagement. He was so pleased with the solutions they identified. He has since retired, and we had a nice phone call right after he retired. And for him, it was one of the most meaningful experiences he had as a leader, was bringing that team together to make those adjustments, difficult ones, but ones that they did as a team.
As profound as the personal discoveries of these leaders are, they are even more compelling because they translated directly into results. They cut $100 million without passing on costs and had concrete plans of how they were going to adjust business practices in sustainable ways. For Louise and her team, their work also drove measurable bottom-line success.
We doubled the business in a time when people didn't even think we could grow 5%. And some people say it can never be repeated again, and they're wrong, because it was a way we went about it. It's just hard work. Work in the right way.
Leading Outward is produced by the Arbinger Institute, the premier provider of leadership development and organizational transformation. If you're ready to build high-performing teams that drive results, explore our solutions at arbinger.com.